Calling all Enneagram Type 9s. They call us the peacemakers, the mediators, the harmonizers, and even the comfort-seeking, self-forgetting, conflict-avoiding, anger-repressing, people-pleasing, procrastinating, indecisive, stubborn, passive-aggressive, yet undeniably likable sweethearts of the Enneagram who just want everyone to get along. Sound like you? Welcome to the Enneagram 9 Show, a place for Type 9s who are ready to take up space in this world, to know that they matter, and to fully engage in life as the brave captain of their own ship. And bonus points if we can do this without sacrificing our naps, pajama pants, comforting routines, and alone time. If all this sounds good to you, you're in the right place, and you're not alone. I'm Kimberly Eclipse, trained counselor, professional astrologer, and everyday mentor for Type 9s. Thank you so much for joining me. Now let's do this. Hey, what's up, Type 9s? Welcome to another episode of the Enneagram 9 Show. I am so excited to share our very first Type 9 panel on the podcast today. I feel like you learn so much when you hear from panels, not just of nines, but of all the types. Because it's one thing if you read descriptions online or you read books, it's a whole other story when you see how it actually all looks in the real world. So I'm really excited about today. But before we dive into that, dozens of people so far have registered for Nines Rising, which is a virtual retreat just for nines. I expect that we'll have many, many more people joining us because we've still got another month for people to grab their ticket. Speaking of which, have you grabbed yours? If you haven't, just head on over to Enneagram9.com to save your seat. And remember, if you can't make it on the day of November 5th, it will be so sad. We'll miss you. And the experience is so epic if you're there in person to experience the workshops and everything we have planned. But remember, it'll be recorded and sent to ticket holders if you can't join us. All right, back to today's Type 9 panel. Our panelists range from college age to their 50s, each with a different life story and currently navigating very different seasons right now. And I really appreciated this because you'll get to see all the ways our nine-isms get expressed at various life stages. You will be hearing from Sandy, a homeschooling mom who talks about what it's like to be naturally content and to be someone who lives in la-la land, as she calls it, as a mom who has to deal with things like disciplining others, you know, not always easy for nines, and how she responds when pushed to her limit, forcing her out of her beloved la-la land. You'll also hear from Joe, who brings to the table such helpful insights and beautiful honesty as a self-preservation 9-wing 8. He talks about feeling angry or stressed on the inside, but remaining calm and cool on the outside. He talks about the pain of his own procrastination, of not having a clear plan for himself and his life, and so much more. You'll also hear from Jaina, a 30-something professional who reflects on her first serious adult romantic relationship. She talks about finally getting stable in her career after lots of indecision and dissatisfaction, and also about living independently away from the influence of family and how helpful that is for nines. You'll hear from college student Julie, who is, by the way, wise beyond her years and so articulate. She reflects so beautifully on the joy and the pain of discovering who she is as a young adult. She talks about the fear of losing relationships or even the opportunities for relationships. And she talks about navigating friendships and forging her own path when her parents are still very much involved in her life. And lastly, you'll hear from Angela, a newer entrepreneur and former longtime stay-at-home mom who is at the dawn of a new season in life, reflecting on what it was like as a 9 who had to advocate for children with very unique needs and who is now at a point where she has to figure out what her own needs, desires, and dreams are in the second half of life. Each panelist also discusses the story of how they type themselves as 9s, how the perpetual perpetual yearning for peace and harmony shows up in their lives, how the fear of loss and separation looks for them in their relationships, and what it's like to lack clarity, certainty, or just firm groundedness around their own identity, who they are at the very different seasons of life that they're currently in. This is a great episode if you want to hear from people who struggle with the same challenges that you do, and if you want to learn more about what it means to be a 9 in the real world. All right, let's dive in. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining me at this very first Type 9 panel that we're having on the podcast. I think what we'll do is we'll just go around and introduce ourselves. So I'll ask that you share your name, a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and if you happen to know your dominant wing and instinct or subtype, you can share that too.
I'm Jaina. I live north of Tampa. I work in a tech company. I'm a software developer, and I'm a one wing. And then I think I haven't dug too much into the instinct types, but I think I'm a sexual.
Awesome. Thank you. Julie, you're up.
Hi, I'm Julie. I am currently a college student and I study in English and psychology. I also am a proofreader and editor, freelance, but I also work for a publishing company currently. And I am a 9-1-1 and I believe SXSP.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Sandy, how about you?
Hi, y'all. I'm Sandy. I'm in Virginia. I'm a homeschool mom to 6, ages 24 down to 8. I think I'm a 9-1-1. My son, my 24-year-old, is the one that's into the Enneagram. He typed me. And as I've researched all the numbers, we've now typed the whole family, and I'm pretty sure he's correct. But I do identify with the 8, the outgoing piece. I read something just recently about the outgoing piece of an 8. I'm definitely like ENFP, very social, very outgoing 9. And so
I gotta go. All right. Thank you. Angela, how about you?
I'm Angela. I live in Dallas, Texas. I've been a stay-at-home mom for about 18 years. And then last year I started a professional organizing business, partly due to the Enneagram and the wisdom that it's given me since I've been studying it the last 5 or 6 years. And I am a 9-1-1, although my 8 is starting to come out a little bit more. And I'm definitely a self-preservation 9. And I guess stacking wise, it would be self-preservation and then sexual and then social.
Hey, thank you. And then lastly, Joe.
I am 9-8, self-pres, then social, sexual blind spot, I guess. And I'm in South Florida and married, 2 kids. I'm married to another 9, actually, and originally from New York way back when, and that's it. I'm in awesome. Construction.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So we've got some variety in here. If you could each share what part of the description of type 9s kind of immediately resonated with you when you first started learning about the Enneagram? You know, what was that moment when you realized, ooh, yep, I am definitely a 9? We'll go in order the way that we went previously with the introduction. So starting with Jaina.
So I was taking a class in 2013, and we went over the Enneagram. And so the day that we were doing the Enneagram, we started going over each type. And, you know, we were all a pretty close group of students. And so we'd start typing each other, you know, as we went down. And I'm like, these aren't me. Like, what? These aren't me. And my best friend was sitting next to me. As soon as we got to 9, they started listing everything. And the thing that really sealed it for me was like the aversion to conflict, that, and just the title of it, the peacemaker. I think those two things were just like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. This is me. This is me for sure. My best friend was right next to me and she just stared at me. She knew exactly that this was me too. So
interesting also that you resonated with Peacemaker, because there are all these different names for nines and people resonate with different ones and then feel like they cannot connect with others. So it's interesting that you like resonated with just the title alone, Peacemaker. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Julie, how about you?
I wasn't introduced to it. I kind of just found Enneagram myself, because I'm sure at least one person in this call knows that when you're a homeschool student, you can get very bored. So I kind of just found it. And it was weird because at first I went through several tests, but we all know that tests can be inaccurate a lot. And I at first thought I was an image type because I went through thinking that I was a 2 to thinking I was a 4. And I was a very active member of the Reddit community around that time. And I actually needed someone to point out that the reason that I thought I was a 4 wasn't really why I was a 4, because in reality, I needed it to be pointed out to me that the entire reason why I thought I was image type is because I have a hard time recognizing that I am noticeable or that I have anything really unique about me in any way. And I think after looking into 9 more, I started to realize that there is also a really heavy emphasis on self-efficacy. And I realized that it's one of the things that dominates my life in a lot of ways. But then I looked more into it and I realized, like Jaina said, the peacemaker, which has always been me, I go out of my way to try to feel like I'm noticeable. But then at the same time, I also go out of my way to try to resolve that in a way that brings inner peace and outer peace the quickest. And I've always been the peacemaker in my relationships. And I think the fear of conflict and the fear of loss is very deep-rooted in a lot of ways. And I find it funny that I needed to have that pointed out to me, because I feel like that's a very 9 thing. Is like, we're not, even people who are very focused on trying to figure out themselves, we still have a hard time really looking inward because that causes inner conflict. So I think that's really how I experienced learning that I was a 9 for the first time.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And so well said. I never thought about it that way. Like, you know, the more you try to get to know yourself, the more conflict potentially you will feel. Awesome. Okay, Sandy, how about you?
I really relate to one of the things Julie said, and that was that the people in my life that are close to me know me better than I know myself and always have. And that's really telling about us and not knowing ourselves. My 24-year-old son was the first, he and his wife got into the Enneagram first. I don't know that I thought much about it. Our church then had a class. What was interesting for me, my husband and I took it together. A counselor told me one time I test as a 2, and that kind of shows me the morphing a little bit. I wanted to be a 4. And when I look at the things I've done in my life, like I was in theater for a long time, that could be very 4 in my past. But then also a lot of Christian women, she said, test as 2s, because that's who we're told we're supposed to be. And so I can see evidence of morphing in different stages and places in my life and what that makes me think I might have been. But then somebody else said, you know your type when you feel like somebody's been looking in at your window and it's kind of creepy because they know so much about you, right? And so my son typed me as a 9 as I started reading about that. I definitely identify, especially with peacemaking. As a parent, I stink at discipline. Like, I want to respect each one of my kids and each person in my family so much and treat them with respect as a person that it's never like I don't lay down the law well, because I don't know how to explain that. It's like a just recognizing them as a whole person and expecting that in return from kids, which doesn't happen. It's just a very interesting thing. I definitely see the peacemaker can always, as family members or friends or, you know, whoever, I can always see the sides, all the sides of it, and can't understand like but you're both right. Or that's what I tell my kids, but you're both wrong. Like, this started, but then you finished it. You're both wrong now. So that's a lot of chatter about, yeah, I see the peacemaking thing. Definitely part of me.
Mm. Oh my gosh. Can I relate to you as a mom? I'm the same way. Awesome. Okay. Angela, you're up.
Yeah. So in 2015, well, first of all, I have a daughter with Down syndrome. So when she was born, it was honestly terrifying to me to think about how I was going to have to advocate for her needs. I was very unfamiliar with the special needs community and raising a child with Down syndrome. But I worked through that. I got through that and I, you know, have volunteered in the community and she's doing great. She's 18 now. But when she was about 13 and my son was 15, both of them changed schools. We moved, we left our church. We had a lot of transitions all at once. And my son also came out as gay. And so I went through this again, this kind of struggle of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to advocate for him now. And now I'm really struggling with how to do that in the South. And he was going to a private boys' school, Catholic boys' school. And it was this really feeling of overwhelm. And no one knew this at the time because he hadn't come out to anybody else, but I was struggling internally with how do I advocate for him and how do I be a good ally? And someone introduced me to the Enneagram and I listened to a podcast that was about 2 hours long. And they, like Jaina, they go through, they start at one and they go down to nine. And I kept hearing them, you know, talk through things. And I'm like, no, that's not me. That's not me. And then when they got to nine and they said that you can see both sides to, you know, situations, but you are not very quick to make a decision, to speak that decision. You kind of, you know, move along, and, you know, with the wind, I found myself, like, I realized that I was doing that. And then the thing that really was like a punch to the gut was them talking about how, nines feel like our presence doesn't matter. That really hit me hard. And, it really was a wake up call for me to figure out what my needs were. I had been raising kids and involved in the Down syndrome community, but I had never really figured out what I wanted to do and what I wanted and what the next few years of our life were going to be as my son went on to college. And it was just a wake up call for me. And so starting to wake up to that and starting to, you know, try to figure out how I'm going to advocate for both my kids, how I'm going to move through this second half of life, you know, and have something for myself. The Enneagram was really a helpful tool for me because it helped me realize I needed to wake up. You know, like you said, like we tend to not be very self-aware. At least I was not very self-aware until this. And it made me realize I needed to kind of wake up and start thinking about what do I really think? What do I really feel? And how can I get that across while still trying to keep the peace, of course, but making my needs and wants known.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing your journey to the Enneagram. And I think it's so common. I've heard, I think Beatrice Chestnut was mentioning this, you know, she is this figure in the Enneagram world, but she's also a therapist. And so she has shared many times that often it's the nine who suddenly has to wake up because the circumstances are just forcing you to get uncomfortable and figure out, okay, what am I really doing here? So congratulations to you for coming to that place and then really trying to find answers for yourself. That's beautiful. And that's why we're all here, I think. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, Joe, how about you?
Well, my wife gave me a book to read, and it wasn't the kind of stuff that's normally up my alley, I guess, though I have an open mind towards things, and I really took to it right away. Someone else said something like it. It's just when I read the nine description, it's just like someone was talking about me, or, you know, someone had been, you know, observing my inner thoughts my whole life or whatever. And it, unfortunately, one of the things that I identified the most with was the whole procrastination bit and the narcotization bit. You know, it's just like, you know, some people say that the type that makes you cringe the most. And I mean, that's kind of definitely what it is for me. I'm like, damn it, that's me. I procrastinate and I go off into my own little world. You know, I also recognize the peacemaking aspects and, you know, and going further along, I definitely recognize the maybe, ignoring my own priority. That's a big one. It's like I said, my wife is a nine also, and we were laughing about it just the other day. It's like, whatever's the most important thing to be done next, that's what we're sure to ignore, you know, like, and that's rotten to admit. I mean, it's not like I'm not effective in the world ever, but I am definitely a nine. I mean, I identified with some two things and some four things and even some five and seven things. But once I started reading about type nine, I knew I was type nine. I have a strong eight wing, and, you know, I grew up in New York, so sometimes I can be assertive in the right situation, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I feel like so many people, even if they don't have familiarity with the Enneagram, even if they're a different dominant type, they will struggle with procrastination, with ignoring the thing that they need to do. But there's something about, as a nine, like the pain that it actually causes in your life that brings it to another level. And it's like, yes, that is so much of why I struggle or why I suffer. And it's different from like the average ordinary person who procrastinates sometimes, right? It's like a different level of pain. So yeah, I can totally relate to so much of what you shared, Joe. So, all right. So let's get into, you know, we've all talked about peace, being a peacemaker and wanting to create peace. So if we could go around and talk about that basic desire that nines have for peace and for harmony, both externally in your environment and then also internally, like how you are feeling on the inside. In what way does this quest for perpetual peace, whether externally or internally, like how does that show up for you in your life, that perpetual desire for it or race for it? What do you think, Jaina?
This is one of the tougher questions. I think for me internally, at least as a nine, when I'm not in a great headspace, when I'm not in a growth state or anything like that, I tend to, I'll numb out a little bit. So I am single. I'm a dog mom. So I live alone. Really did not figure out myself until I was living on my own. Because of my, well, this is part of it. I definitely, if I'm around a group of people or if I have a particular friend group, I definitely go with the flow. Like when I'm in that friend group and I'm want to hang out and do the things that they're doing, I am all in, 100% gung ho, let's go. And I don't, you know, I don't question anything. I says, we're just going to do it. We're just going to go do this. So externally, I think that's kind of how, I don't know if I'm even answering the question, honestly.
No, you are. Yeah. That okay. Go with the flow.
Yeah.
Desire to not cause any waves. You're
right,
just riding the wave, whatever that wave looks like.
Whatever the wave looks like.
Yeah.
Internally, I find myself, well, I think Julie, what you talked about, the inner conflict when you are searching for yourself and stuff. So some of that has come up, but I think especially the last 2 years, I have started deconstructing my worldview or what it was at one point in time. And that in and of itself has brought me peace. You know, I have, you know, our tendency to merge with the people around us. That was very much a thing for me as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult, with friend groups, with family, like with my brother is a three, and he's very successful. We're very close. I love him dearly, but I would try and, you know, follow in his footsteps, but those aren't my footsteps. And so within the last few years, when I've moved away and living on my own, as I find pieces of myself within that, I become more peaceful internally as well, if that makes sense.
Yes. Okay. That makes so much sense, actually, because I think it really speaks to the fact that we will settle for a surface level mm-hmm. kind of peace, you know, like, so yeah, we're getting along, not causing any problems. But then that finding yourself and all the pieces of yourself, like it turns out, wow, no, this actually feels deeply peaceful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. How about you, Julie?
I think it's interesting because I actually relate a lot to what Jane has said about relationships and trying to follow in other people's footsteps because you don't necessarily know your own. I think it's come up a lot, actually, even since I was a lot younger. Like my friends, when I used to be in a co-op, they used to joke that I had an existential crisis before I turned 16. I think a lot of trying to find yourself, for some people, it's not easy, but it's not as confusing and honestly painful, because in order to do that, you're in a constant state of, I don't know what I'm thinking, and I don't know what I'm doing that, and I'm concerned about that, and that's causing inner conflict. I think both internally and externally, there is an overwhelming feeling of inertia, the constant feeling that you do want to change or move or do something, but there's something that's always holding you back. And I don't think the yearning for peace is a bad thing necessarily, but I think it is something that absolutely holds us back in a lot of ways if we overthink it or overdo it. Like, I recently got into a relationship, and it's interesting because my mother is my parents are both very great, both image types, interestingly enough, but they have their own paths, but they also try to craft a path for me themselves. And I think that it's not necessarily their intention, but I think that recently getting into this relationship with someone who is not necessarily from the same path that my parents are, or going down the same path that they envision for me, I think it's interesting me realizing that maybe what my parents set me up for isn't necessarily the path that I want to go down. And it's not, I don't know, it's very hard because I want to make my own path, but at the same time, I also put it off telling them the truth, because it will cause conflict. And no matter what, I can't make that. So I push it off and do my best to find my way around it, even though the only way I have is to move through it.
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you for saying that the search for peace is not a bad thing. Like, it's a beautiful thing, except, you know, when it ends up getting in our way. But I think so many people are going to be able to relate to exactly what you've said. So awesome. Thank you. Sandy, how about you?
It's interesting as I see the progression of my life and see the differences. You know, upon getting married and having children, I was extremely idealistic, and I really believed in everything that I was doing. What was I going to say about that? I'm still thinking of, I'm very easily content in all the situations. I can be very easily content. And so I don't recognize, I live in my la-la land. I love my la-la land. I was so positive all the time and live there. And I'm 51 now, around 48. There were things that happened that just kind of torched everything I believed about life, and just just, I feel like everything that I worked my whole life for blew up in my face. And having, so as we were talking earlier about finding yourself, it was forced on me. I didn't want to, it was forced on me. And all this time that I thought I believed in all these things. And so it was good and it was right. All of a sudden that's like, there's a lot of questioning there. And so the internal peace now, I don't know that I'm still there yet. I honestly want to bolt all the time because I would like to just go live by myself in a cabin in the mountains with my coffee in the morning. I've never been that person. I always wanted people. I always like craved people and I've never wanted that aloneness like I do in this time of this period of my life. So I don't know what to say about that. I'm still searching for that peace in the day-to-day now. And it's different. And I think Angel said it earlier, like I'm looking at the second half of my life and I hadn't been looking forward to the second half of my life, to be honest. And so looking for that joy again, searching for what that looks like and finding self in that. And still, I'm doing a lot better. I've been on it at it 3 years, but I've still got a long way to go.
Sandy, why are you my twin? Thank you. Angela, how about you?
So when you first asked the question, the first thing that comes to mind for me as a self-preservation is my surroundings. So I've always been, we moved a lot growing up. And so I almost like had to be organized. I had to like make my space easily movable because we moved so often. And I had two organized parents, kind of a semi-organized house. And so I grew up kind of with that. And I learned early on that for me to have the right frame of mind, to get my work done, to concentrate, I can't have clutter around me. And so I have always been like, I've always tried to make my home like my sanctuary and my peaceful space so that I can function, quite honestly. And so I guess the Enneagram honestly helped me realize that, oh, I actually do have some gifts to offer. And I've been organizing all my life. And so that's why I started the organizing business so that I could help others do that, which I've loved. But then internally, though, I have kind of like Sandy, like you get to this point where you like things start to change in your worldviews start to change. And I had to kind of wake up to that and really start to examine like some long held beliefs that I've had. And do I really believe those? Like where do I stand on things? And I had to come to peace with myself on some uncertainty around that. Like it's okay that I'm not quite sure where I stand on this, but if I can sit still and I can kind of sit with it for a while and process it. I'm not a quick processor. I have to think through things. I'm like one of those that stands in the shower and thinks about my past conversations. If I can just be okay with that and understand that that's what I need to do, I will eventually get there and I will eventually develop what I feel and what I think. So just coming to terms with like how I think and that it's okay to be not the quickest processor and being okay with some uncertainty.
Wow. That's beautiful. Yes. Honoring how you move through the world, honoring what you need to feel good. And I could tell that you're a self-pres from your background. Is that a real background or is it virtual?
No.
Oh God. As you can see, I am not, I'm self-pres blind. I'm just like, guys, this is my kid's closet. Welcome. It's a mess. All right. Don't look at, I'm not going to turn my camera anywhere else because you'll just see bags of unfolded laundry. So you're just going to look right here, please. All right. Thank you. How about you, Joe?
So the peacemaking thing can be strange to me sometimes. I feel like I had a lot of chaos in my childhood and a lot of definitely some conflict, and then I liked angry music and an angry music scene, and being rebellious and being a misfit and that kind of thing. But when I think about peacemaking, even being in a scene like that, I was often considered, you know, the person who was very laid back. And I think probably other nines would identify, you know, like I had that appearance to people a lot of times, but inside I'm not laid back at all. I'm stressing out about a lot of stuff. And you know, like it, a lot of what I've gotten from the Enneagram is trying to put a finger on that anger inside of me that I don't like to admit to or to touch or manifest a lot of times. But as far as the peacemaking, I mean, like, one thing I think on the positive side, I think that the type nine structure, I think we have a lot of empathy for other people. I think we understand how other people are feeling, how other people are operating. We can put ourselves into the perspective of other people very easily. And, you know, I think that's a very good thing. You know, like, it's not like I never dislike anyone. I've never had a problem finding a few people to dislike here and there. But I can usually try to see things from other people's perspective, and also kind of appreciate the little things in life. So that's two things right there. You know, like as far as naturally avoiding conflict with people, you know, like I, you know, when I can understand where another person's coming from, you know, why do I want to have a big debate or conflict with them over something instead of trying to come to some kind of agreement with them? And the same thing if I'm appreciating other people and appreciating like life and the little things in life, you know, I find that I can enjoy myself in all kinds of situations. So if I'm going out with friends, you know, like, maybe I don't care if we go to Chinese or Japanese, or, you know what I'm saying? Or I don't care if we're going to go, you know, to the lake or to the forest, you know, like, I'm going to enjoy myself either way. So, you know, so I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, you know, like, these are good qualities, but then if I'm staying in that habit to the extent where I'm ignoring my own identity or ignoring, you know, what I need for myself, then that's when I get into a danger area. You know, and sometimes it's hard to draw the line, especially if the habit is to, you know, never say anything about it. I lost myself a little there, but I hope I'm being a little clear. And you know, and one thing, like in trying to study the Enneagram recently that I kind of realized is that same, you know, what I consider to be a bad quality, like when I don't speak up for myself, you know, say, you know, like I'm avoiding conflict with someone. I don't, you know, tell someone that I disagree with them because I really don't want to have the conversation. I don't want to bother having a fight about this. My time is better spent, right? Or whatever. But, you know, maybe I'm not admitting to myself that this is something I really have to have out. But in any case, when I'm doing that, you know, and I'm like that consistently, I become a person that people go to talk to because they know that I'm not going to step up and be someone that has a conflict with them. You know, so what I'm getting at there is that, you know, the same thing that I can dislike in myself becomes the so-called superpower or the thing that people are extolling as great in the nines. You know, like, I'm this person that everybody can get along with and everybody can talk to. That's because I'm not asserting myself, because I, you know, like, I'm not making my own opinions manifest maybe when I should. So I don't know, when I realized that, it really struck me. It's like, the thing that I'm doing that's hurting myself is what's making me this attractive peacemaker in some situations. So that's what I got.
Yeah. Wow. I'm so glad that you're with us today. One, as a wing eight, I think it's really important for us to hear someone, a fellow nine, say, actually, I do have anger and I see it there and I feel it, you know, because it's harder for some of us, the wing ones. But yeah, it's so, I mean, I think that's everyone, right? Where your shadow self is connected to your superpower, but then it's just how aware, how often do you talk to your shadow? Like, are you close enough friends where you really understand each other and have grace for each other and accept each other? It's so interesting. Well, let's dive into this other, a hallmark of the nine, which is fear, this fear of loss and separation. We'll go around again and we'll talk about nines seeking that peace at all costs relationship. So if you could each talk about how that shows up for you. I'm going to try to like not chime in so much this time as we go around so that it's just going to be you guys. All right, we'll start off with Jaina.
For me, I think it manifests in different ways. One of the biggest examples is, so I am 35. I did not get into my first serious relationship until I was 32, which I think honestly was probably good for me because I got to see everybody else make their mistakes and help them. And then I got to start living mine. So I don't regret that at all. But the person that I was dating, we merged very quickly. You know, we started, that's how we met online, started our conversation talking about personality types. And then I introduced them to the Enneagram. They're in Enneagram 4. But we merged so quickly. It was within a couple of weeks that I was just at their house daily. But we only dated for a total of 9-ish months, I think. But within that time, broke up 3 times and got back together 3 times. But our breakup, were sitting on their couch, holding each other, bawling our eyes out for 3 hours, like on both of our ends. So that we had such a connection that loss and separation of this person that I talked to, that I love dearly, but we know that for the future, it's not going to work out between us. Like having to say goodbye to that and that loss and separation, that kind of has fed in to that loss and fear of loss and separation. You know, I kept calling myself like, I'm a teenager who just went through her first breakup. Like that's what it, you know, felt like. So there is that. I do have some anxiety. Like I'm the middle child. I have an older brother who has 3 boys and my sister has 2 girls. And so I have anxiety because I come up with these scenarios in my head that make me worry, like something's going to happen and I'm going to be separated from them or I'm going to lose them in some bad manner. And so my dreamer mentality comes up with these terrible scenarios too. So for me, the loss and separation fear is, you know, it's really big with the people that I'm closest to. I've seen this described, and I think it was a 9 thing, but I have a tendency to, you know, relationships, friendships kind of drift apart sometimes. And for me, I could pick up the phone and talk to this person like we just talked yesterday. But on the other end of things, that has changed. That's not going to be the same relationship that it would have been. I think that's why I kind of never, you don't formally end a friendship. It just kind of happens most of the time. But just being conscious of that loss to me, like realizing that can happen too, you know, it's making me want to prioritize my current relationships in my life more, especially with friendships. I just moved to Florida. I don't have a ton of friendships. And so I'm trying to make more, but I want to be conscious of making sure that I stay connected to them.
I'm kicking myself that I said I wouldn't chime in. I won't. Thank you for sharing that, really, all of that. Julie.
There's the unmute button. There it is. I found it. I think it's interesting because in a lot of ways, our fear of that loss, not only of relationships, but loss of opportunity as well in some ways of having relationships. I think it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy because something Sandy said earlier about sometimes you just want to cut and run and cut it off everybody and just cut off everything in your life and just leave into the mountains and never return. I think that that's something I highly relate to, because we tend to push ourselves so far in not losing our relationships or our opportunities for relationships that we get so burnt out to a point that we just want to cut everyone out of our lives and just leave because we don't know how to stop without hurting somebody or ourselves. And so it's that immediate urge of, I just want to rip the bandaid off and just leave everybody and go. But I think it's also interesting what Jaina said, because sometimes we don't always realize that if we're not in a relationship with somebody as much, if we're not conversing with that person as much, we can talk to that person like everything's the same. But like, for instance, my best friend is a six. And so she always wants to make sure that her closest relationships are close to her. And sometimes I don't realize that I'm not doing my part in staying as close to her. And then I don't realize that she may feel our friendship is drifting apart because I don't make enough time because I'm so scattered, thinned out like butter on a piece of bread, just trying to spread myself across, trying to do as much as I can to maintain as many relationships as I can and maintain as many opportunities as I can. And I don't realize that the people I'm closest to, I'm not maintaining that closeness anymore. And I think it's also interesting because the fear of loss, it's hard to determine whether you trying to avoid certain things is your wish for peace or your fear of loss. Because I think that some of us may think that if we decide to go down our own paths, if we choose one person over the other in some instances, we're going to lose that other person and we don't want to lose anybody.
Yeah. You guys are going to make me cry. I'm still going to be silent over here though. Thank you, Julie. Sandy, how about you? You need a tissue?
That's for sure. So something Jaina said made me think about change is bad, especially when it comes to people. When people move, I feel that's so a deeply grievous thing for me. It's not a loss of friendship. It's not a loss of relationship, but just the fact that they're not in my physical presence for time is devastating to me sometimes, to the point where I struggle to accept that for a while. Something Julie just said made me think too. I don't realize sometimes, because I'm going around in my la la land or in my I don't realize that something has drifted as far as it has until it's blown up. Like, I don't see the signs from the other people around me that it's not okay. I'm still going around that everything's okay and really believe that inside. So for the people that I'm really close to, especially that contentedness, like being content no matter what, no matter how, like not even seeing, like I can really have, I can explain away the bad parts so easily because I can see their part in that too and understand where they're coming from and why it is the way it is. And with such understanding that then for the people that I love, I can so easily martyr. Like I can be a martyr and take it all for the good of the relationship, for the family, for the group, and feel like it's, you know, the right thing to do even. That's in my idealism, that this is what should be done in preservation of all the things.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I need to step away and start journaling. Angela, how about you?
Like Sandy said, moving can be difficult. And in some ways it was fortunate that I had to move around a lot growing up. And then we moved a lot. We moved 4 times in the first 8 years of our marriage. And so I grew kind of accustomed to that loss and those changes. And I would try to like look forward to what we had ahead. In 2015, when both of our kids changed schools and we had to move kind of out of the suburbs down into the city, we were only moving like 15 miles away. But it felt like we were moving across the country in some ways, because I had a pretty close group of girlfriends there, and I was going to like be leaving that group and not really seeing them much. And I really had a lot of anxiety over that. But I knew deep down inside that that was what was right for my family and what was right for me. We needed to change. We needed to move out of there, and we needed to be closer to these schools for my kids. And so, but I really struggled with that. I struggled with feeling like that I was not going to be part of the group anymore. And I had to work through that. So I definitely like that, like I'm searching for connection, but then also like, you know, grieving the loss, or trying to minimize the loss is something I've had to work through multiple times, but the moving has been one of the more difficult times for sure. So.
Yeah, that's tough. Thank you, Angela. How about you, Joe?
So, I mean, this is one that I struggle a lot with. It's like the basic fear of type 9, right? But I don't think I necessarily disagree with it, but maybe I don't admit it to myself. But at the same time, you know, like I wouldn't be so interested in the Enneagram if it didn't make like a ton of intuitive sense to me and like seemed to work in so many ways. But, you know, like I'm also careful that I don't like, you know, try to make myself fit into the model rather than see how the model might fit into my life. You know what I'm saying? But you know, like a couple people were talking about intimate relationships, you know, and I maybe hadn't thought about the basic fear in that context before, which makes me think of like merging with the type 9. Cause you know, like it rears its ugly head sometimes nowadays, but I don't think I do it as much as I did when I was much younger. But, you know, like I definitely like, I merged with a friend as a teenager and tried to emulate him a lot. And then, you know, like the relationships that I had, the intimate relationships that I had, I would smother the other person, you know, and it sometimes ruined the relationship before it could even happen because I would fall for people so hard, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, and you know, like with age, maybe wisdom, who the heck knows, I, you know, like as I got older, I realized that, you know, like if I wanted to have a healthy relationship, you know, like I couldn't act like that. It wasn't going to work out well. So I learned to step back a little bit. Like I said, the fear of loss and separation, and yeah, when I had close relationships and had breakups, they were very hard, you know, like earth shattering sometimes. I mean, that's probably a common human experience, not necessarily just this type, but you know, I think that, you know, like I don't like to, it's again like an unpleasant truth or whatever. I don't like to admit to myself how much I actually care about what other people think of me, you know, because I do, you know, like I don't always want to, you know, I want to go my own direction, or I want to, you know, be who I am, not caring what anyone else thinks, but I'm a human and in society with everybody else. So, you know, like other people's opinion matters to me more than I admit to myself, I've realized in recent years. So maybe that's connected somehow to this fear of loss and separation. But, you know, at the same time, like when it has to happen, when, you know, like the fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me kind of thing, you know, like when someone pushes me hard enough, it's like sometimes you just have to cut it off with like ridiculous political stuff in recent years. You know, I strongly disagreed with some stuff that people were, you know, saying, and I just, you know, like, okay, I had to cut people off, you know, and I still don't regret it because I still hold those beliefs, you know, like, so sometimes, you know, like I'm not just going to, you know, it's if I'm on social media as your friend and you're saying stuff that I think is completely hateful, then it's like I'm implicitly endorsing that, and I don't want to, so I don't regret it. You know, I regret that people have to be like that, but I still think I did the right thing. Anyway, I'll shut up.
No, I like that eight wing showing up. I'm like, I need some of that. And also, but there was something that you said that was so, I love some, oh, not trying to squeeze ourselves into the type 9 box. Like we are just using this as a tool to help us understand ourselves and not feel like we are in a box. I really appreciate that you said that. That was a great point. All right. This is my last question before we do our mini lightning round at the end. And we've kind of all spoken about this, about, you know, because of our tendency to self-forget, to numb out and prioritize other people. A lot of times there's this sense of not really knowing ourselves. There is a haziness around who we are, or like a something unsteady about who we are or what we want. So how does that show up for each of you? And I guess even before I say, how does that show up? Does that resonate with you even? Because it might not. Jaina?
Yes, it definitely resonates. Since my 20s, I've had a bunch of different jobs. I've had a bunch of different school experiences, friend groups. There's been a lot of following in other people's footsteps, like I talked about. But for me right now, I think like in this moment right now, like I live on my own now. I have a better sense of who I am, but I am still struggling in the day-to-day. It's a constant battle with my career. It's like, what am I supposed to be? What should I be doing? I don't believe in tying ourselves to our careers, like making that the defining thing about us and the first thing we say to people when we introduce ourselves. But at the same time, because I'm not married and I don't have a family right now, which is that's the only thing in life that I want. Like, that's the only dream that I've had since I was little. And big changes kind of throw me for a loop sometimes. And it makes me question myself and try to pick up different pieces of who I am again. Like, when I was going through my boot camp, I was living with my parents again because it was during COVID and everything. And I found myself merging into their patterns again, like when I was a teenager, you know, and like I didn't like that. Like, I wasn't, but now I'm home again. Like, I'm have my own place again, that I am able to like remember those parts of myself that I had found when I was on my own again. I don't know if I made any sense just then at all. So I'm sorry.
Well, what I'm hearing that was interesting. That's okay. Nines meander. We meander. I mean,
I'm good at it.
We do that. We do that. No, but what I'm hearing from you though is, one, it's like when you're trying to figure out who you are, if you don't have what you want, then sometimes it's just like, okay, then am I my job? I mean, I know mm-hmm. I'm not just yeah. my job, but it's like you try to hang on to something because you don't, mm-hmm. you know, what's your deeper answer? I don't know. So then I am just whatever is here on the surface that I can see, that I can easily articulate.
Yes. Right? You just articulated that way better and shorter than I did. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jaina. How about you, Julie?
This is absolutely something I relate to, but I also think it's probably the hardest question for me to answer because I don't like to admit to myself that I numb out and self-forget a lot. I think it's because I don't feel a great sense of identity and because I don't feel a great sense of uniqueness, that knowing that I forget myself and numb out doesn't really help. I understand that some people find like their careers like very important to them, but that doesn't mean that that's really who you are. And I don't know. I think the awareness of the fact that you self-forget and the fact that you want to know yourself can in itself be very helpful to try to clear that up. But at the same time, it's never going to be easy because that fogginess never really goes away. And you're always going to be trying to grasp something, and you may not realize at that moment that that's not really something that makes you who you are.
Yeah, I think this is a hard question. I think because it's, oh gosh, ask a bunch of people who don't have a hard time figuring out who they are, what it means to not know who you are. It's like getting kind of meta now. Sandy, what are your thoughts on this?
I think I just keep going back to being easily content. And by the time we get in the cycle to me and the questions, I am probably morphing into all you guys because Joe said something that inspires this answer. And now I don't remember exactly what it was. But I think because of our morphing, we I think we find a lot of interests, right? We're around so many different kinds of people. And so we're kind of like a jack of all trades or a jacqueline mm-hmm. of all trades, right? Yep. So then it's hard to hone in on the one thing. And so I look over my life, there are times I was in theater, there are times I wanted to live outside, there are times that my husband is so other than all these things. And I've been truly content, and the life I've chosen here. So I think that's, it's hard to answer because we're hazy. It's hard to answer how we're hazy because we are hazy.
I need to rethink my questions here. I love that answer though. I can relate to that. How about you, Angela?
So I got married at 27. I had kids at 31 and 33. And when my daughter was born with Down syndrome, I mean, that became my identity, honestly. Like I was so focused on taking care of my kids and being a stay-at-home mom. My husband traveled a lot and meeting the needs of my daughter, which were extra. And, you know, there was all kinds of stuff that I had to do and health concerns and things, therapies and stuff. And so that was my identity for a long time. And I enjoyed it, honestly. Like I do feel like there were periods of time where I enjoyed that because I got very involved in the Down syndrome community and advocating and volunteering and doing all of that. And but it was around the time that we moved her to a school for people with intellectual disabilities, and my son started going to high school, and I started looking ahead and thinking, okay, well, like, gosh, I've been doing this for a long time. And I just started feeling like I, you know, and the Enneagram kind of, you know, became a part of my life then. And I realized, oh, this is all I have right now. It's that I've been doing this for so long. And I love that part, but I definitely realized there was this longing in me that wanted something more that was my own and that was separate from my kids and my family. And I didn't have that anymore. I had that before I had kids when I worked, but I had this longing and I didn't realize I didn't realize that I had it until I started to understand the Enneagram. And I was like, oh, okay, that is the discontent that I'm feeling. That is the frustration. And then it took me 4 or 5 years to kind of figure out, like Sandy said, I have a lot of interests. I have a lot of things that I like to do. And I feel like kind of I'm a jack of all trades, but I didn't have like a concrete gift to share with the world. Like I'm not a writer, I'm not a photographer, you know, I don't have creative. My very best friend, she is an 8. She is as intense as you get. And she has 8,000 talents. I mean, she could do anything. And meanwhile, I'm over here just, you know, taking care of myself and like, well, what do I have to offer the world? And so I really had to kind of take some time. And luckily my husband's been very supportive and he's like, look, you do have a lot to offer the world. You just need to think about what you really like to do. What do you like to do? Start doing it and see if you like it. And if you don't like it, move on, you know, like you have that opportunity. And so instead of like finally like looking at it, like, oh, what I'm, you know, this kind of dread, I was like, okay, I have this opportunity. What do I like to do? And that's where that's how I got into organizing. And I will say, like, I just recently hired a social media manager to help me kind of with my brand, because I'm starting to do like presentations and, you know, speaking engagements and stuff. And I worked in marketing. I worked in brand management in my past life. And it's still hard for me to come up with my own brand of myself. And she's helping me to do that. I need help doing that because it's hard for me to narrow it down. Like, how do I simplify that? How do I simplify that message to my customers and my clients? And because I have so many things that I want to be, you know, so I've had to really work on that right now. So.
Mm-hmm. I think so many people are going to be able to relate to what you shared. Thank you, Angela. Joe, can you relate to this feeling of not knowing who you are or a haziness around your identity?
Oh, definitely. And I'm relating to everything everyone's talking about. I mean, there's some sense where I want to be like you know, on some level, I do know who I am, you know, like, but maybe I'm just fooling myself. I don't know. Like, you know, like I have a history and I have things that I like and I have things that I believe and communities that I belong to and ways that I know to help people. You know, there's certain principles I stand for, and, you know, I'm a husband and I'm a father, and, you know, so there's ways in which I feel like I at least know myself a lot better than I used to. But at the same time, I always envied people, you know, who were like, whatever, you know, I'm going to be a doctor. And, you know, they go to medical school and they become a doctor and, you know, follow their life plan. And, you know, like that's when it becomes clear to me, you know, as much as I want to say, I know who I am, you know, like, you know, that dreaded question, if you're whatever, at some kind of business meeting where everyone has to go around and, you know, like, say what their interests are, or what their hobbies are, you know, like, sometimes I'm a freaking blank or whatever, you know, like, and that's embarrassing, you know, like, or if someone, you know, if I try to think, okay, what should my 5-year plan be? I should have a darn 5-year plan. I'm a 50-year-old man with you know, 2 children and blah blah blah. And, you know, my wife and I are working on it, but do I have a 5-year plan I could tell you about right now? No, not really. I recently had a health scare. You know, like I said, I have a 13-year-old and I have a 10-year-old and I'm 50. So, you know, look, I need to be around a little bit longer, you know, and right now, like, I'm not allowed to lift more than 10 pounds at work. And my job usually has a lot of physical components. So, you know, it's very strange. It's been making me think about type 9 stuff in relation to it in a lot of ways, because I have a whole lot less energy than I used to. And, you know, managing energy is something that nines can have problems with. And it's, you know, and as far as identity goes, you know, a large part of my identity in this particular job that I happen to drift into, like a 9 will do, a large part of my identity is to, you know, be the supervisor who's down in the trenches with the guys. I'm not going to ask them to do anything that I don't do myself. And now I can't do it myself. I'm not allowed to, you know? So it's just, it's strange, but I think that's one of the most valuable things the Enneagram has given to me, that I need to ask these questions. You know, like I said, you know, like I think one of the biggest lessons for me as a type 9 is I don't want to sleep the rest of my life away. You know, I did sleep a lot of my life away, you know, drift from one job to another. And, you know, I'm friends with everybody and, you know, I'm enjoying things, but, you know, I do want to make a mark on the world. You know, I want to be there for my children and I want to have some kind of a plan. Things tend to work better with a plan, as much as I would like everything to work out perfectly just because it would be nice if it did. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. I could just, like, I really appreciate the beauty in what you said. And also I recognize the pain too. I recognize, like, the pain in there. So thank you for sharing. As we wrap this up, the way I want to end was just on a high note of, like, really quickly just sharing a type 9 win that you feel like you've had recently, big or small. I'm not going to go in the round in the circle because I don't know if all of you guys, like, feel like you have a win recently that you can think of. So whoever wants to chime in.
My favorite thing, we have 6 children, and it was really important to me that my children are all who they are. Like, I wanted them to all not have parental push to be something they're not, or like, and our children are, every single one of us in the family, we haven't typed our 8-year-old. He's a little young. We're all a different number on the Enneagram, and they are fiercely, to a fault, daggone it, who they are, each and every one of them.
I think, personally, I think that the awareness that I have that sometimes I do try to self-forget, and sometimes that I do, but I don't have a great sense of identity. I think the awareness of that, I've been able to hone that into examining that not as a conflict, but as just something that I need to strive to do, because it's never ending, right? It's a constant journey, but it's not a conflict to me anymore. It's simply an idea. I think the ability to look at it and study who I am in a sense without feeling as though I'm grasping at straws or creating a conflict with myself, I think that that awareness, that drive almost creates inner peace. And I think that I'm just proud of the fact that I have been able so far to take that and look at that and have at least somewhat of an understanding of who I am. And I think that's enough.
Mine was, I guess my biggest one was that I went through a software development boot camp. I really found myself as I started this new boot camp, and I found something that I really truly enjoyed. And this is going from somebody who had been an admin. I was going to go, had career goals for like 5 different things. You know, I could never decide. And so finally this made sense, and I made a really close community. And I really felt like within that time, my biggest goal was, you know, was so that I could finish that, get a job, save money, and buy a house and move closer to my sister. And I had those goals, and I was in that growth. I was in that, heading in that type 3 direction with that growth mindset.
Anyone else with a win to share?
I actually have one more, if it's okay.
Sure.
Just, you know, where your greatest strength lies is also your greatest weakness, and vice versa. And so as we talk about being easily content, as difficult or as hard or as yucky as that can be, it can also be a really great strength. Or our sloth, the ability to relax a bit, the ability to take a nap, even if it's an epic one, we might need to hone it in. But I hope that we will learn to recognize our strengths along with those weaknesses. They balance each other out. Mm-hmm.
So one of my type 9 things is that I can get very comfortable in uncomfortable situations. You know, like, so I stayed in the same job for 15 years, and after a certain point, it wasn't going any further, and I was not enjoying myself, and I wasn't being treated well. So like, what is it, like almost 3 years ago now, just before COVID, unfortunately, I have to date it by, I was able to switch job to a job with a better income. And then when that didn't work out after 2 years, again, I switched jobs like 9 months ago now. So, I mean, it's just not letting myself feel trapped, you know, not just staying in the same position because it's the easiest thing to do. Is something, or reaching for that type 3. I deliberately was reaching for the type 3 in this last job change, and it wasn't as easy as I hoped. It was hard. I didn't want to be a type 3 after a few weeks of it.
I was just going to say, I am proud of the fact that I've kind of woken up in the last couple of years, and I'm like starting this like essentially a new career at 52. So that has really allowed myself to, like, I've forced myself to kind of get out of my comfort zone and ask for things that I don't normally ask for, and trying to seek out clients and things like that. But then also I realized too that the things that help me become like, feel my feelings, think through my thoughts are nature and music and art. And I have learned to appreciate those more and not be kind of afraid to just feel my feelings and think through what I need to think through, because I appreciate like being able to get out and walk, and I love being outside in nature. We have a screened in porch that I am like, if it's not 100 degrees out, I'm out there. And so I'm just learning to like appreciate the fact that those are offered up to me that I can use to, you know, help me be a better person and a mom and everything else. So
That's awesome. Congratulations to all of you for your wins, big and small. I mean, I feel like the common denominator here is one, taking action on what we want, leaning into that three, line to three. But then at the same time, really having like a softening and a compassion in terms of how we operate. There are some things that are just so simple and easy for us. And it's a beautiful thing. Like, it doesn't require any judgment, really. It just is. So I just want to thank everyone for joining me today. So much insight and wisdom. So thank you again. Hey, Type 9, I hope you enjoyed that episode. If you found it helpful, would you be the best and leave a rating and a review? Now, you understand, it's hard enough to know that as a 9, I matter. But my bigger question is, does this podcast matter to anybody out there? Anybody? Anybody? Let me know. I'd love to hear from you. Lastly, if you're looking for Type 9 resources, events, or services, check out Enneagram9.com. There you'll also find a link to my services as a trained counselor and professional astrologer who helps Type 9s looking for clarity and direction in any area of life. So whether you're at a crossroads in your relationships, career, or business, or you want some insight into improving your sense of mental, physical, or spiritual well-being, let's uncover your personal destiny and choose your next right steps together. See you there.